Well, our next guest is probably the most important political ad man in America today. And there's a very good chance you have never heard his name. His ability to cut through the noise and make people take notice is legendary. He plies his trade on the Republican side of the political fence, and we're quite lucky to have Fred Davis, the CEO of Strategic Perceptions, with us tonight on the Midterm Report. Fred, welcome to POTUS.
Thank you, Adam, and that was a very kind and generous introduction.
Well, now I get to tear you. I want to tear you apart on the radio. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Where are you tonight? Where do we find you?
I'm in my office in Hollywood, California.
You guys are right underneath that Hollywood sign, aren't you?
Absolutely. I see it out my window this very second.
Can you see 2012 from your window?
I do not see that, but I would like to see. The view is a little hazy.
One of the things that that we have been focusing on, Fred Davis, here on the Midterm Report on POTUS, has been the impact of communication in this political discussion that is the campaign trail of the 2010 midterms, and visual communication and how important that is in conveying a message and then ultimately reaching people. You are masterful at this, and I say that in a reverential way, and I don't want to mix words about it. Some of the things you have done have been quite stunning and really innovative, and I want to ask you, for people out there, they don't know who you are, they're going to know this. I've got one ad queued up. I don't want to really even tease it, but I want to just play it, and then we can come back and talk about how important this one has been in this cycle.
Okay.
I'm not a witch. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you. None of us are perfect, but none of us can be happy with what we see all around us. Politicians who think spending, trading favors, and backroom deals are the ways to stay in office. I'll go to Washington and do what you'd do. I'm Christine O'Donnell, and I approve this message. I'm you.
I am you. So you're that guy?
I'm that guy, Adam.
Well, this has really probably been the one ad that has caught all of America talking about it. It turned into a Saturday Night Live skit. And I heard you talking to Parker Spitzer on CNN the other night about this. And will you relay that story to us? Am I right? You had really only met Christine O'Donnell just prior to taping that interview or that ad. Am I right?
Yes, but first of all, let me correct the time frame there. Saturday Night Live had already done their opening skit on Christine. David Letterman, Jay Leno had already made her the butt of so many jokes. Bill Maher had already broadcast at least one or two of the pieces of old footage about her. And at that point is when I first met her. So that was already a given. And I was expecting to find somebody who was not qualified to be in the United States Senate, if you want to know the truth. And I went to Philadelphia. I was hired without ever talking to her. I went to Philadelphia. I met her in a hotel lobby where we were going to walk down the street for dinner, and then I needed to film her the next day. So this was a very short, compacted time frame where many of our races, we have a year or two to study it, get to know the candidate and their positions on various things. So I met her, and within a minute or two of talking to her, I realized I was completely wrong and that I'd bought into, you know, the media perception now. Is it the media's job to hide things like Bill Maher's tapes? No, of course it's not. That should be part of her background and something that should be discussed. But I found a very serious lady who was knowledgeable on the issues and was not a big egomaniac like some politicians can be. She was down to earth, and I'm sitting there having dinner with her over steak and was thinking, you know, she's like everybody else with one big difference. And that is, she has the gumption to go out and fight to do something about a country that thinks she thinks is headed in the wrong direction. And so I was impressed by that. And the witch angle of it, we had to get over. At that point, that was all anyone was talking about. Now, I noticed recently Christine has come out and said something like she tried to pull the ad. I don't think that's what she really meant. I think what she meant to say was the purpose of that ad was to try to bury the witch comments. And of course it got attention. But if you've noticed, it did the trick. It did bury the witch comments in a very short period of time, and we narrowed a very wide gap between our big taxer opponent, Chris Coons, in half. So in my opinion, it worked fine. But there was no option of ignoring the witch. You had to do something about that because it was in the same sentence. Christine O'Donnell equals witch. And by saying I'm not a witch, we put it on the table, we drew a line in the sand and said from this point on, we talk about what's important to Delaware and not this silliness from the past.
You know, I would agree with you wholeheartedly that it was very effective and that it did exactly what you said it did. It turned the page and moved the conversation on in a way that many of your ads over time have also done. But I want to ask you, you know, when you sit down with, let's say in this case, Christine O'Donnell for supper the night before you're going to shoot an ad like this, was that script already in your head? Did you conceive of it that night? Was your game plan in place, or was your ability to sort of take the measure of the candidate really at the heart of your strategy in the shoot the next day?
What I try to do, Adam, in that particular case, of course I'd thought about it, because she was the number one subject in the United States in the political world at the time. I remember it hadn't been just a few weeks before when she won the primary. I think it was, if I recall, it was a late primary, and I was here in Hollywood with a reporter named Phil Rucker from the Washington Post, and we were having dinner, and his BlackBerry started buzzing like crazy, and he looked at it and he goes, "Oh my Lord, Christine O'Donnell beat Mike Castle in Delaware," and I'd never heard the name Christine O'Donnell. I think everyone just assumed Mike Castle was going to win. Phil, being a great political reporter, knew the name, and he was amazed, and I checked it out when I got home that night, and I was kind of amazed. So I'd thought about it, and then I got the call asking us to do this race, but I never write an ad until I've actually had time to talk to the person and get to know them. What I try to do is have enough time to develop a good relationship with them so that I can take the pieces of their personality that I think are the most attractive and try to find a way to communicate those with voters.
Having watched that ad, and it occurs to me that you probably taped a few iterations of this, because that one pivoted rather quickly from the arresting I am not a witch to an I am you format that was a variation on that theme. And those are the ones that got more in rotation. How do you gain the confidence of candidates when you put them in that position? They're literally putting their political careers in your hand. And in this case, it's an example of, I don't think we ever saw her more comfortable or at ease with herself than we did in that taping.
She was great, Adam, and I'm glad you noticed that. She was there with her sister, and it was just the two of them. We weren't in Delaware. We filmed it in Philly just because the TV, you know, studios were a little more accessible and had what I needed there. She was probably a little uptight when we first chatted. I was uptight when I first met her. That lasted about 10 minutes. We became, it was a very relaxed situation. So by the time the next day came, I read her the scripts while they were doing her hair and makeup. And her sister was sitting there, and her sister happens to be an accomplished theatrical director. So I thought, well, this will be interesting. You know, there's two directors, which is usually a bad sign. But her sister and I got along great, and we agreed on these points, and Christine agreed them. She was a little nervous about I'm Not a Witch, but we talked about why. And she went out there, and I bet you we didn't film more than, I'm guessing, maybe three takes of that. I mean, she's just, unless, you know, she's under this pressure cooker of politics, she's a remarkable lady. You know, she's pretty good under pressure too, but we had a very calm, relaxed day the next day, and we filmed, you know, several ads. The goal was always to engage people with the first ad, to take another look at the client. But we didn't have much time. You're exactly right. That ad didn't run more than 3 or 4 days. But that was the plan. We didn't have a lot of days. You know, she didn't have much time between this unexpected primary win and the general election next Tuesday. So we had to take what was basically a year-long political campaign and boil it down into just a few weeks. So if you know your first ad is only going to be able to run 3 or 4 days, you really have to make sure that people see it and talk about it. And I think that was accomplished.
We are talking to Fred Davis. You can call him lots of things. He is really a communications genius. He's a producer. He's a director. He is an image maker. He's a consultant. And if you put a fine point on it, he's an ad guy. He helps to create communications that really fit strategic needs in rolling out images and people and contrast and all kinds of things. You have been, Fred Davis, really involved in a lot of campaigns in the 2010 midterm cycle. Do you feel comfortable just sort of running down what some of them have been? I've got a lot of ads, some of which that I have a personal curiosity to discuss with you and get your take on, not unlike the one we just did, but talk to us about the ones that have been most fun for you and where you've done your work.
Well, there have been a lot that got a lot of attention this cycle. One campaign in Michigan is an interesting one for a gentleman named Rick Snyder.
You know what? I have this ad. It is just sitting here, and I love it. And I wanted to play it for folks, but I wanted you to sort of come to it naturally for us. So I'm going to turn over and talk to Andrew, who's running the board. It's the Rick Snyder ad at the bottom. Let's have a listen to it, and then we'll have you talk about it on the other side.
Okay, great.
Michigan has tried career politicians. We've tried Happy Talk, and we're 50th out of 50, dead last.
It's time for a nerd.
Growing up in Battle Creek, Rick Snyder started reading Fortune magazine when he was 8. By 23, he completed college at the University of Michigan and his MBA and his law degree. Rick Snyder is a very bright entrepreneur who happens to adore Michigan.
But we just can't fix it. We need to reinvent Michigan.
As president, he grew Gateway Computers. He's nurtured innovative companies to grand success and has grown thousands of jobs in Michigan and across America. His 10-point plan to reinvent Michigan is so detailed that, well, it's likely no politician could even understand it.
But it's the way to finally save our state.
Rick Snyder for Michigan. He's one tough nerd.
He's one tough nerd.
And he really is.
Well, tell us the story. How did you get to this, Fred Davis?
What'd you say, Adam?
I said, how did you get to this?
Well, it was fascinating. I got hired by a spectacular political consultant named John Weaver.
Uh-huh.
And I had never met Rick Snyder. And John is not the most communicative guy in the world. He didn't tell me anything about him. He just said, Fred, I need you here on Thursday. It was kind of like Christine. I need you here on Thursday night. We'll have dinner with Rick. You can write something, and we'll film the next day.
Well, no pressure.
No pressure. And how do you know what crew to bring? You know, you don't have a clue what you're going to be filming the next day. It might be one guy in a studio. It might be a band of 1,000 people marching, you know, in honor of the character. So we had no clue what to do. And one of my partners and I showed up in Michigan, and we went straight to this restaurant to meet him. And here I saw the table. I could see which one was Rick. And I remember thinking, thank heavens, he looks like a governor. This is a good sign. And I knew he was probably smart because he'd been the CEO of Gateway Computers in their glory days, in the good days. And so I walked up, kind of pumped up, and there was an empty seat next to Rick, and I stuck my hand out, and I said, hey, I'm Fred Davis. You must be Rick. And he goes, hey, Fred, how are you? And he had this kind of what I would call nerd voice. And my heart sank, you know, and so I sat down, and within about 5 seconds, I absolutely adored him. Within 5 minutes, I knew he was a genius, and within 10 minutes, I knew he was going to be the best governor of Michigan if we could get him elected. But nobody knew his name. Nobody knew anything about him. He was running against quite a few people in the primary, some of which were long-standing, established, fairly popular politicians in Michigan. So in my little notebook that I carry in my back pocket all the time, I wrote down, nerd was the first word I wrote down, and then as he started talking, I wrote down smart nerd and some other nerd-like setting. And at the end of dinner, he said, well, Fred, do you have it? Oh, one other important thing. A couple minutes into meeting him, he said, I bet you've never had such a nerd for a client.
So he said it himself.
He said it. I didn't make it up. But I'm sure he had no clue of using that as his campaign slogan. So I, at the end of dinner, by the way, John Weaver was ill, so he didn't make dinner. He wasn't able to get to Michigan. So it's just me kind of having this conversation. At the end of dinner, his wife is across the table, and he said, well, do you have any great ideas? And I said, well, I don't know if it's a great idea or not, but I said, what if? And I said, here's my analysis of this race. Michigan has tried everything else. You know, your unemployment is horrific. Education's horrific. The state is in a miserable state. You've tried politicians. You've tried old politicians. You've tried new politicians. You've tried this lady who's governor now, who's known as Happy Talk, you know, big positive stuff with nothing behind it. Maybe it's time you try a nerd. And I said that thinking I would probably be thrown out of the restaurant. And his wife looked across the table and said, oh, honey, that's you. And they loved it. And by some miracle, I was not only not tossed out, but I went back to the hotel and I'm suddenly writing nerd ads all night.
This stuff fascinates me. It really does. And I could sit here and we're lucky to have you for a little bit more time here on the Midterm Report, Fred Davis. I just hearing the creative process and trying to imagine, and I hope that listeners who are listening to this can conceive not just of these dinners, not just as those first meetings with a client, but there's so much at stake in these campaigns, as we all know. If it's jobs, if it's leadership, whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, when you're trying to get your name out there and you feel that you can make a difference in a leadership role for your community, you're really going to put everything you have into it. And when you get a resource at your side, like Fred Davis, the pressure is as much on you, Fred, as it is on that candidate, and to sort of see clearly to a narrative that's going to be effective and to cut through that noise, as I said at the top, is a really special gift.
Well, I appreciate that. You've described it pretty well. That is, and it's very, very high stress. This is a particularly high stress week, even though most of our actual hard work is over, because people are making last-minute adjustments, and you have to help them make a call, say which ad to run or how much money to put behind it or positive versus contrast and those kind of things, that if that call goes wrong, they might lose.
Yeah.
So it's a tough week.
You know, I know that we talk about contrast ads, what people who are not in the business would most commonly call them, negative or attack ads. You know, I want to talk to you for a second and get your thoughts on this whole idea of earned media. And for folks in the business, that really means when other people are talking about and playing your ad, the free airtime that it may get on a network like POTUS or on the cable networks or even up on YouTube. Your work has really transcended, and when I called it innovative before, I think, in my humble opinion, it has garnered so much attention. There's an ad I want to play for folks right now. You were helping out Ben Quayle, will you tell folks about that for a second?
Well, I did Dan Quayle's vice, when he ran for president in 2000, I was the media consultant on his presidential campaign. So in addition to doing that, Dan Quayle and I became very, very, very close personal friends and have been for ever since 2000. So I know his family real well, and I knew Ben, his youngest son. And I never thought Ben would go to a career in politics. He's kind of a business guy, you know. And Dan called me one day and he said, "Fred, I'm shocked to tell you, but Ben's going to run for Congress here in Arizona, where they've grown up and lived." And I was amazed to hear that, and talked to Ben, and Ben started out the presumptive leader in the race because of his last name, basically. People didn't know Ben Quayle, but they knew and adored Dan and Marilyn Quayle. And they'd been a fixture in the community forever, so it was a big name there. And Ben did really well until near the end of the primary. And
it was a real crowded field for folks who don't know this race.
There were 11 people, lots and lots of people there. But we were up pretty substantially, and it was kind of a cush, easy race. And all of a sudden, one day at 5 or 6 in the morning, Ben's home phone rang. And he only answered it that early because his wife, Tiffany's father, was ill, and it was in the hospital, and they were worried something had happened. He answered the phone. It's a reporter with the words you never want to hear, and those words always start out with, "Mr. Quayle, we're running a story today, blah, blah, blah. We would like to know if you'd like to comment."
Would you like to comment?
Yes. Horrible words to hear.
That's like having Mike Wallace chase you down the parking lot.
Exactly. Exactly right. And the words were pretty bad. And the words were, "We understand that you were a co-founder of a pornographic website, and you wrote some, you know, salacious stories under an assumed name for that website." And it's 4 or 5 in the morning, 6, whatever. Ben doesn't know what to do. He answers them and hangs up. And I don't hear about it for a couple of days till it becomes a big deal. And Ben's opponents in the race suddenly, you know, they smell blood in the water. And they start attacking Ben on these completely untrue stories about this website. And Ben did not co-found it. The original website had nothing to do with pornography. It evolved into that years later after Ben had nothing to do with it. But it didn't sound good. And they just pushed it and raised a bunch of money. And just
In the end, most folks, and I don't want to castigate all journalists, but you know the old saying that no one wants to let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Exactly right. And this co-founding issue, which was a big piece, that reporter has since gone back and said, "Oops, that wasn't true." But do you think anybody saw the oops?
Well, yeah. And you know, enter again, Fred Davis, who helped to turn the page for many Americans. Most people were not aware at a national level that Ben Quayle was running for Congress, but then this ad started to play. I want to play it for folks now, and hopefully we can pick up this conversation right after this is over.
Barack Obama is the worst president in history, and my generation will inherit a weakened country. Drug cartels in Mexico, tax cartels in D.C. What's happened to America? I love Arizona. I was raised right. Somebody has to go to Washington and knock the hell out of the place. My name's Ben Quayle, and I approve this message.
Wow. I mean, talk about a game-changing ad. This one just turned things around, didn't it?
It did. But again, in an interesting way, Ben Quayle wrote that ad. Fred Davis didn't.
Okay, what a great insight.
We were sitting in Dan and Marilyn's breakfast room at their home, and we were going over the miseries that he was being put through because of that website and these people attacking him. And I said, "Why on earth do you even want to do this? Go back to your business. Don't run for Congress." And he said, "I'll tell you why." And he's a pretty serious guy. And he looked me dead in the eye, laser eyes, and said, "I'll tell you why, because Barack Obama is the worst president in history." And what he said was a little different from the ad. He went on to say, "And it's going to hurt my generation. So it's my generation that needs to get up there and fix the place before the damage is done." And I had a legal pad in front of me, and I wrote down, "Barack Obama's the worst president in history." And I talked to Ben for 5 more minutes, and there were a couple other guys from the campaign team there. And in 10 minutes, we'd written that script. And an hour later, we'd filmed it. And a few hours later, it was on the air, and it changed the subject from this crazy website in the past into what was important in this race. And it worked well, and we won a substantial victory on election night.
You know, the for folks who are not producers in any way, to hear Fred Davis say that while we shot it in a couple hours, it was up on the air. Let me tell you something, folks. Turning around something like that that quickly in and of itself is a huge lift. And I love the way that you say that, because the hardest part in the end is not the production. It's the message, and it's how it's communicated. The rest of it is something that you're either really good at or you're not. And obviously, your team is great at it, but here, just around a table with mom and dad and a family friend, it just came right up to the top on its own.
It did, and I think my job is not so much to craft these clever images and things, it's to listen and try to put the words and dreams and thoughts of my various clients into these ads, find what they want to say, and find a way that's innovative and interesting to say it so that people notice.
Fred Davis, the CEO of Strategic Perceptions out in Hollywood, California. You really had even more game-changing, and I wish I had even more time to go through this. There's some other things I feel we really need to get to before we leave each other tonight. But I do want to make mention of this. You have been behind some of the most impactful ads in California races this cycle, specifically on behalf of Carly Fiorina, who's the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. She's running against the incumbent Democrat Barbara Boxer. And my question to folks or that I get from people about these ads is less about the things that they remember, because the ads are just riveting visually. But it's really about this. These are not ads in a conventional sense, and I'm talking specifically about the so-called demon sheep ad and the hot air ad. These are really long web videos. They're movies in a sense. When you come up with an idea like this and it's so out of the box and you sell it to folks, do you know that this is going to be the kind of earned media giant, this YouTube phenom, viral video, or is it just about trying to communicate and get people? Most people don't watch movies that long, Fred.
The Demon Sheep was the first of that series, Adam, and I had no clue that it would end up with millions and millions of YouTube hits. We were trying to find an inexpensive way to... This new guy had entered our race at the last minute. He'd been running for governor, and all of a sudden he flip-flops and decides he's going to run for Senate because he has a better chance to win.
I love this, because somebody turned Fred Davis loose on another Republican in the primary here with Carly Fiorina. And Fred might not tell you this, but, you know, it was as incisive an ad as could be. It was around this idea, and we're not going to really have time to play it right now, but... FCINO, which is kind of a play on Rhino or Republican in name only, and this was fiscal conservative in name only, right?
Exactly right. And it was true. It was an absolute hardened fact that guy was not really a conservative. But to win the primary, he had to say he was. So the normal thing to do is you do a video, and it has nasty pictures of him, and it says he tells you he's a conservative, but he's not. Who would watch that? Who would listen to that? Who would talk about it the next day at the water cooler? No one. And so what I saw was a guy who was telling you something that he's selling you a pig in a poke, as we used to say in Oklahoma, or he was a wolf in sheep's clothing. So we took the wolf in sheep's clothing, we produced a very inexpensive video, and all of a sudden people gave serious thought to whether that guy was really a conservative or not.
I'll tell you what, short of getting Justin Bieber to do a campaign ad, I don't know what was going to get more YouTube hits than this. It's phenomenal stuff. Hey, Fred Davis, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us and the folks here on the Midterm Report at POTUS tonight.
Adam, you're a very great interviewer, and I had a good time. I appreciate it.